You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter, Anthony DiComo. The first line on my notes here reads, so, I mean, what just happened? And I think that's kind of the question, because the entire story of the Mets and the perception and seemingly fan interest and everything has radically changed in almost exactly 7 days.
Yeah, I mean, it's been probably, you know, I struggle to describe it because the 10-game homestand that they came off, that they ended last weekend, was one of maybe the most ridiculous homestand I've ever covered. It had pretty much everything. It had drama. It had incredible games. It had news all over the place. And it just, by the end of it, the entire outlook of the Mets season had changed. They had made four trades. They had gone, and now they're a first-place team, and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, you get to that final weekend of the homestand against the Nationals, and the fan base that had just been a complete sleeping giant, I think that's pretty clear now, was just yearning and waiting for the team to go ahead and have a stretch like this. They woke up, and all of a sudden, Citi Field was rocking like Shea Stadium in 2006, and it was just a really fun atmosphere. I think for the first time, probably since 2008, the last time the Mets had legitimate playoff aspirations, people are genuinely excited about this team. Not that it's not a team without weaknesses, not that it's even a team that's better on paper than the Nationals at this point, even though the Mets are in first place, but this is a team that all of a sudden, you know, you go from, well, it sure would be nice if the Mets could make the playoffs, to it would be disappointing if they don't.
Can you point to, and again, it's hard to pick out any individual thing within this week and a half, but with the fan reaction, because well into a point where they were really in this and really a factor, the fan base seemed very hesitant, reluctant to believe, reluctant to commit, and frankly reluctant to enjoy what even before then has been, you know, one of the better seasons in a few years. Was it getting the Cespedes deal done? Was it Wilmer Flores' game? Is there one point you can point to where this went from Met fans being so hesitant to really even enjoy, never mind believe it, to really sort of getting into this?
Yeah, I would point to the Cespedes deal. I think that has to be it. Because this goes back not just a week or not just a month or not just a year. Throughout Sandy Alderson's tenure as general manager, throughout the recent history of the Mets, for as long as the specter of Bernie Madoff and the Ponzi scheme and all these financial questions have loomed over them, there's been a bit of a perception from fans that, you know, we're not going to buy all the way in until we see the commitment from the front office, from ownership, that they're going to meet us in the middle. You know, a couple off seasons ago when the Mets signed Curtis Granderson and they signed Bartolo Colon, people were excited about those moves, but there was a sense at the time that it was like, well, let's just make one more big move and then we'll get really excited and we'll be all the way in. And the Mets never did that. And I think people kind of came away a little disappointed. It wound up being a disappointing season last year. And I got an almost identical sense at the trade deadline this year. They acquired Kelly Johnson. They acquired Juan Uribe and Tyler Clippard. The Wilmer Flores game happened. People were happy. People were getting excited about the team. But there was still the sense that there was one more move to be made. And the Carlos Gomez deal falling through the way that it did, it just created this bubble where the Mets had to do something. If the trade deadline had come and gone, and again, the Cespedes deal was not consummated until 3:47 for the 4 o'clock deadline. So as recently as 13 minutes before the deadline, the Mets didn't have a deal done. And if 4 o'clock had come and gone last Friday and they hadn't done anything, it would have been an entirely different story. It would have been more just upset, moaning, you know, people, and rightfully so, disappointed with the direction the team's taking, even if they had been winning. Now, all of a sudden, you strike for one of the best players available at the deadline, if not the best player available at the deadline, and it changed everything. I think all of a sudden people bought in. I don't know the figures, but I think walk-up sales, you know, at the ticket window for tickets that weekend at Citi Field had to have been off the charts. People are excited. People are love the move, and it just totally changes the outlook. A team that had great pitching and was struggling to score, all of a sudden, again, not that they don't have weaknesses, not that this offense is any sort of juggernaut right now, but they go from fringe contender to legitimate contender. And I think for the first time since really 2008, when they had gone out after a disappointing 2007 season and acquired Johan Santana, I think for the first time since then, the fan base really feels like they're getting met halfway on this thing.
And from a practical baseball perspective, the sequence of moves is really interesting because there are a lot of pieces that, at least to me, are not entirely clear how they fit, and there's going to be a lot on Terry Collins to make them fit in the best way possible. It sounds like, let's start with the outfield, it sounds like Michael Kadire is back soon. Does that necessarily mean Conforto goes down, and how do they, once that happens, how do they make first the outfield pieces fit together with the various ones they have?
Yeah, I think that probably means Michael Conforto goes down, and he actually did a really nice job while he was up here, but the Mets have high hopes for him and want him to play every day, which he wouldn't be able to do now with Kadire coming back pretty imminently. You know, it would have been a big issue, but the one thing the Mets didn't 100% realize when they made the Cespedes trade was that this guy not only can play center field but wants to play center field and looks through a few games like he's pretty good at it. That was one of the big factors why they wanted Carlos Gomez, because they wanted a guy who could play center. And now with Cespedes doing that against right-handed pitching, it frees you up to do a lot of things. You don't have to move Curtis Granderson. You don't have to play him in center, which the Mets were unsure about. There's a lot more playing time for Kadire. You can sit Juan Lagares a lot of the time and have him come in as a defensive replacement late in the game for Kadire, and so on and so forth. So that really solved a lot of issues for them. And then the infield has been sort of a mix-and-match du jour for Terry Collins. They've got a lot of third basemen on the roster now. They've got a lot of second basemen on the roster now. They've got a lot of platoon guys on the roster now, and what it's done is it's helped Terry to keep guys fresh, to rest guys, to bring defensive replacements in. We saw Daniel Murphy get a day off this week. We saw Kelly Johnson get several days off this week. Juan Uribe has started a couple of games but mostly come off the bench and done a nice job in that role. So it's the situation now where all of a sudden you're not starting the same eight guys every day regardless of how much they're struggling. And then you look down late in the game and instead of a bunch of guys on the bench who, you know, maybe are there just by default because you don't have better options, you've got legitimate major league hitters on the bench now regardless of who starts. So it has been a mix and match thing. I think Terry Collins has done pretty well with it so far. And, you know, I think you're going to continue to see more of the same over the final 2 months.
Is there any worry about too many infielders and keeping these guys live between Murphy, Uribe, Johnson, Flores? Before we even get into whenever David Wright comes back, that's a lot of guys for a relatively small number of spots. When, again, you've also got a lot of outfielders, and Kelly Johnson might get some outfield time, except there's not really an option. And the kind of follow-up to that is there a scenario where maybe there aren't enough at-bats for Flores and maybe he becomes the odd man out for a little while and goes down? Is there a concern about how – I mean, again, it's a good problem to have. You'd rather have it than the opposite problem, but about making all those infield pieces fit.
Yeah, I think shortstop's the one position you mentioned, Wilmer Flores, where that could wind up being an issue down the line, only because they have so many options at second base and third base where Flores can also play. So it's been a lot of, you know, can Wilmer play shortstop, and if he can't, where does he go? The Mets have given Ruben Tejada a lot of those reps. But the one thing I will say regarding that situation is that with the exception of Daniel Murphy, who's played pretty much every day and deserves to with his track record, there's no one on that infield who's necessarily used to or committed to playing every day. You've got a lot of guys who are used to playing 4 or 5 days a week, whether it's Kelly Johnson, Juan Uribe, Flores I would put in that group, and so on and so forth. And then even when David Wright comes back from the disabled list, he's certainly not going to be able to play every single day of the week as much as he would like to and says he would like to. So I don't think there's a huge battle. I don't think there's a lot of guys who are upset with the playing time. I mean, Juan Uribe, for example, has been great for them off the bench. At his age, in his mid-30s, is probably better served in that role, starting against left-handed pitchers and come off the bench. Kelly Johnson, like you said, can get some at-bats in left field or right field, in addition to the 1 or 2 days a week he might start in the infield. Eventually, Flores, particularly if he's not producing, might be the odd man out. But for right now, at least until David Wright comes back, the pieces do seem to fit. And even once David Wright does come back, you still have Eric Campbell on the roster who you can send down, and that frees up a bench spot. So I think despite the fact that they have all these pieces, the fact that they're all versatile pieces for the most part has helped them and should make the situation work.
All right. Well, Anthony DeComo, thanks for taking some time to talk here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.